Well, hello and welcome to the Unleash Your True Purpose Now Super Summit interview series. And we're here to help you unleash the best that's in you so that you can realize your true purpose in life that is about passion and something that truly energizes you and nourishes you in your life. And today we have the lovely Pip McKay with us to talk to us about how to reach our passion and purpose in life. And Pip McKay is Australia's beloved coach. She's a pioneer in the field of personal transformation and coaching. She's dedicated the last 20 years of her career to creating landmark techniques and processes that assist individuals in discovering their unique passion and purpose, as well as removing negative influences and empowering them in the fulfillment of their true potential. Pip is also an exceptional speaker, a personal coach, as well as a highly respected thought leader and innovator in the areas of NLP and coaching. She's personally created the entire field of matrix therapies coaching and archetypal coaching. Her patented techniques have been taught throughout Australia and around the world for over 14 years. They are based on proven psychological, spiritual, historical, and intellectual foundations that have created a new holistic movement in the field of coaching. Revered by her clients and colleagues, Pip's style has been profound, intuitive, entertaining, and results-driven. So welcome, Pip McKay. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Dawn. Thank you.
So happy to have you with us today. I am so excited about what we're going to be talking about.
Yes, me too. I love sharing this information.
Okay, so archetypes. How did you discover your passion and purpose of life? I've been asking because everybody's got this unique journey, you know, that unfolds in this perfect time-space sequence, even though it might not seem like that during the time. But
yes.
What was your journey? How did your journey unfold? How did you discover your passion and purpose in life?
Well, it started when I was 6 years old. So I was watching a television program and Audrey Hepburn came on and she said that she wanted to be a performer since she was 6 years old. And I thought, oh, I'm six. I'd like to be a performer. And if I decided right now that I wanted to be a performer when I'm famous and being interviewed on television, I could say I wanted to be a performer since I was 6 years old, just like Audrey Hepburn.
Mm.
And from then on, I pursued acting. And I did ballet and I pursued acting. And what I was really looking for and what attracted me to that area was that I thought that it would be fun, that I'd be free to express myself. I thought that it would be magical and creative. So this was what I was looking for, although at the time I didn't realize that that's what I was looking for. And then I went to New York. I studied acting. I came home and I was performing on stage. And suddenly I realized that this was not for me because I didn't feel free to express myself because I had to say somebody else's lines and words. It didn't seem very magical. It might be magical for the audience, but it wasn't magical for me. And it wasn't very creative because I was having to do what the director told me to do. And I realized then that I didn't want to do acting, that what I thought it was going to give me wasn't what it was really all about. And that took me on a journey where I traveled all over the world. I went to Findhorn. I hung with the Hopi and Navajo Indian people in America. I went and traveled all over the world looking and searching for what was my passion and purpose. And then, you know, after a long time, I came home and I looked at this 20-year spiritual apprenticeship I had done on archetypes. And I looked at what I was already doing in coaching and NLP, and I suddenly saw a pattern. I suddenly saw that in actual fact, what I was searching for were these very specific things. One, in order for me to feel passionate, I had to feel like something gave me freedom and was an adventure and was fun. So that was one pattern I was looking for. I had to feel like it was magical and that people could make magical transformations and that that's what I could do. And I had to feel like it was something really creative and something that nurtured people. And when I realized that that was the pattern of things that I needed to look for, I realized that they actually reflected three archetypes. And I've been studying archetypes for a very long time. And we had looked at distilling archetypes down, all the hundreds of archetypes down, to just simply eight for passion and purpose. And I realized that my archetypes were what we call the innocent adventurer. So that's an archetype that loves to have fun and go on adventures and explore new things. And that my other archetype was the magician, and that's an archetype that loves magic and magical transformations and being catalysts for change. And that the third archetype that really made me feel passionate was the creative nurturer. So that was someone who is creative but also is nurturing and understands people. So that if in my work I expressed these three things, then I would have my passion and purpose. And the beauty of this was that even if I decided to change career, so long as my work still had these three things in it, I would always be on passion and purpose. Because I felt like, you know, if your passion and purpose is like, you know, a destiny, it's not going to be just a job like acting. It's going to be the meaning that that job gives you. And so what I then did was I was able to incorporate this into my business. And now what I do is I go on adventures all over the world. I discover new information, which is the innocent adventurer. I then create a technique from that information. And that technique allows people to have magical transformations. So in our archetypal work, we see that archetypes have a particular order, and the order of my archetypes is the innocent adventurer, the creative nurturer, and then the magician. So I go out, explore, discover things. I create something new out of what I've discovered, a new technique, and that new technique helps people transform in a magical way. And so long as everything I do, no matter what it is, and all the variety of things that I love to do, so long as it has those three things in it, I know that I'm on passion and on purpose. And so then I created a technique to help other people do the same. And, of course, that technique explores those three things. And so it allows me to feel like I'm on purpose and that I'm passionate and love what I do.
Wow, it's amazing, you know, because we grow up with these ideas of what we think our success in our career is going to be. And oftentimes we get in them, we're like, this is not really, I'm not feeling this.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that's the thing, because sometimes what we think something's going to give us is just not what it actually is in reality. And we have to find a way of matching this ideal of what we want with the reality that's in front of us.
Wow. And that's kind of part of what I, you know, the uniqueness, such a strong point in this summit, is because I believe everybody has this unique path. And if we're constantly following this, what we think is where we need to be, we can miss the mark. You know, it's like outgrowing an old paradigm of what was possible and creating something entirely new, like what you did.
Absolutely. Because I think for a lot of people, you know, they're very influenced by what you said before, society's concept of success, or what their parents thought success would be, or a spouse or somebody else. And it means that they're really missing what makes their soul sing and, you know, what is their real identity and being able to express that in the world. And the other thing I think sometimes people feel is, say, like me, you know, they wanted to be a singer or they wanted to be an artist and, you know, life hasn't led them down that path, or they found that they didn't really have a talent for that. It's good to know that you can let go of a job, and so long as there's a certain pattern that you've got that you can incorporate in your new role, that you'll still be on passion and purpose. So, you know, for me, I just turned 50, and, you know, I think that there'll come a time when I'm not so keen on standing up on stage and giving long seminars, which I, you know, am happy to do still at the moment. Yeah. But there might come a time when I don't want to do that. But when I decide not to do that anymore, I might take up something like writing. And even though that's quite a different type of thing to do, so long as that writing allows me to pioneer new things, be creative, and those creations help people transform, it doesn't matter then what is the form of what I do, so long as it has those three things, I'm going to be happy. And it's so good to know that, because if, say, you are a ballet dancer or a sports person, when you retire, it's good to know that if, so long as you go into something that reflects who you really are, it doesn't matter if you're let go in an old form, so long as it still has this pattern.
Wow. Now, what is an archetype?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, and archetypes, because they've been around for a very long time, there's a lot of different definitions. And what I like to do when something's got a lot of different definitions is to go back to the source. So the word archetype comes from the Greek, and arch means best and universal, and type means pattern or symbol. So the way I like to define archetype is a best universal symbol. So if we looked at, say, something like mother, if we look at what the symbolic meaning of mother is, it isn't just someone who gives birth to someone. It is, if we think of it symbolically, it is someone who is nurturing, someone who's unconditionally loving, somebody who is creative, somebody who understands you. So this meaning is what the archetype of mother is. And this concept comes from Plato. And, you know, it's had a long history. And what happened with the word was that Jung took up that word and he used it to describe simply a repeated universal pattern. And so the meaning of it changed a bit. So you could have something in Jung's work like orphan, and that would be, he called that an archetype. But really, in our work, we would say an orphan is the shadow of the child archetype. So a child archetype is someone who is innocent, having fun, going on an adventure, playful. That's the archetype. An orphan would be a shadow of that archetype, because an orphan is a repeated pattern that means somebody who is alone and sad. And we would say, no, that's a shadow of the ideal of child. So a lot of work with Jung, say Karen and Meese, they incorporate shadow and archetype all in the one and call it archetype. But we like to make a distinction and say, no, the archetype is the ideal of something, the best it can be. And anything that is in a similar category but is not the best that it can be, we would call shadow. So, for example, a mother archetype, you know, loving, powerful, protective, creative, you know, strong in her own right, that would be the archetype of mother. But a stereotype or a shadow of mother would be a 1950s housewife who is subservient. So that's the distinction we make, and that's what we see an archetype as being. And the beauty of an archetype is if you understand this ideal and you look at yourself and you see ideal patterns, you can start to strive for the ideal in your life and you know exactly what it is. And we also have techniques that allow you to let go of shadow. So, you know, if you feel like a bit like an orphan child because your parents didn't understand you, we have a way of clearing that. But you also know that you are striving for this ideal expression of child, which is, you know, innocent, playful, fun, happy, you know, exploring the world in this wide-eyed open wonder. And when you understand that that's what you're looking for, it's really good because you can set goals in that way whilst letting go of these old negative patterns.
Wow. So it's like focusing on the pattern versus focusing on the specific image. Like this, an archetype is about a pattern, an ideal pattern, an ideal, you know, to focus on the pattern so that it's taking the pattern from this archetype and using it within yourself of what you want to become, so to speak.
Exactly.
A higher expression. Okay.
Exactly. Wow. And what Plato believed was that we were all born already with our destiny. And what happens is that we drink from the waters of forgetfulness before we are born, and we forget that. And our journey is to rediscover this destiny that we were given before we were born. And so in my mind, if this is a destiny that is given to our spirit or our soul or whatever you want to call that, it's not going to be a job. You know, your soul's not interested in a job, but it might be interested in an archetypal expression. so that each one of us has three archetypal expressions that it's really important for us to do, for us to feel happy. And that when we can find those, that's really our passion and purpose, to discover that passion and to make that able to be real in the world and successful and sustainable in our world. So I often say to people that it's our passion plus our talent that equals our purpose. If we can find our passion and our talent, then we're on purpose. Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, you know, because you think of archetypes sometimes, you know, and it seems more or less people will talk about the idea of the archetype, the image, and being very, you know, focusing more on that versus the pattern that the archetype is really here to express, you know,
yes.
So that each of us can have that different expression, that unique expression of that ideal idea,
yep.
Ideal pattern within us. And it's going to be expressed differently in everybody. Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's like the archetype is this universal umbrella, and that each one of us might express that in a different way. So, you know, the innocent adventurer, my expression of that might be to have fun, go on adventures, and to pioneer things. But say someone like Richard Branson, his expression of that archetype might be also to pioneer new things, but to also have a joke, be a bit more of a practical joker. Whereas I don't really have that. I mean, I like to have fun and enjoy myself, but I'm not much of a joker. But he is, and that's another expression of exactly the same archetype.
Okay, nice. And everybody's pretty much got three main ones within each individual, but if we, those are our primary ones, that if
that's
we can
right.
really get and clear on those, we're good.
That's exactly right, and that's where our genius is. That's where it's easy for us to be, and so that's where flow is. So it's really important that in a business we're expressing our genius and our flow. Excuse me. The other thing that I'm really keen on, so we have three passion archetypes and we have one talent. So that's something we're good at. We might not necessarily be excited and passionate about it, but that's what makes it financially successful. So if we can do our three passions and our one talent and we can marry those together, then that's what's going to make it financially successful. And what happens for a lot of people is their job that they get paid for, they're just using their talent, and that's why they're not very excited about it. And then they have on the side a hobby or a business they want to create, and they're just using their passion in that, and that's why often they don't make very much money from it. But if you can marry your passion with your talent, then you're on purpose and you can make money from what it is you love. And this is a missing piece that I've seen in a lot of passion and purpose work, that people then find the thing that excites them, but they can't make money from it. So in my work, we kind of go, okay, let's find out what your talent is. So, for example, in my situation, my talent is the knight. And the knight's able to set goals and make things happen and get results. Now, I wouldn't go on holiday and want to be setting goals and getting results. That's not what I'd do just for my passion when I was relaxing.
Right.
But somebody who had the knight as a passion archetype, that's exactly how they do a holiday. But me, I like to just wander around, have fun, explore things. That's very much the innocent adventurer. But in my work, if I wasn't able to help people get results, well, then I wouldn't be making a lot of money from what it is that I do. But because I can marry those things, I'm able to do exactly what I love and earn a great income that supports my lifestyle and allows me to live in the place I love to live, by the beach, and, you know, allows me to go on holidays and have fun and do all the things that being financially successful allows you to do. So it's really important that we can do both. But what happens for a lot of people is they set up their passion business and they leave their talent behind because they kind of blame it for why they weren't happy at work, and then they just can't make it work in the real world. So we need to be able to marry those two concepts together in order to be successful.
Wow. And you said, I know that there's many archetypes, and I think you've said that there's eight archetypes that you work around in particular with your passion and purpose.
Yes.
What are those eight archetypes?
Yes, well, these are eight archetypes. What I discovered was that out of the hundreds and hundreds of archetypes that were out there, they can all come under eight umbrellas. And that some people will be the whole umbrella and some people will be a specialisation. So I'll just go through each of the eight, and I might give an example of a famous person who epitomises those eight so you can get a real sense and a picture of it. Okay. So the first one, as I said before, is the innocent adventurer. So this is someone who loves to go out, do new things, has lots of energy, loves to have fun, is a freedom fanatic. And, you know, so again, like I said before, Richard Branson would really epitomize that. You know, he's someone who's got a lot of energy. He does things in a different way. He pioneers things. He has a lot of fun. He's a bit of a joker, and he loves to go on adventures. So that's the innocent adventurer. So that's the first archetype. The second archetype is the magician. So that's somebody who is able to create magical transformations, be a catalyst for change, but also someone who does something that appears magical to other people. So if we think of someone like Walt Disney, we can see here is a person who's been able to make a lot of wealth and money from doing something he loves, which is magical. So, you know, people want to enter into a magical world where the mundane world is transformed into something extraordinary. I often say to people, can you imagine if you were a bank manager and somebody came in and said, look, I'm going to make billions of dollars out of the drawing of a mouse that talks and walks before we knew anything about animation. Most people would go, sure. But it's magical how Walt Disney was able to make his fortune out of doing this, such an improbable thing that seems really magical for us. And when people go to Disneyland, they feel like they're entering into a magical world. So that's the magician. Then the third archetype is what we call the oracle. This is a much more mysterious archetype. These people are magnetic. They tend to be much more introverted. They've often got psychic capacities of some kind. So if we think of Athena Star Woman, there's a lot of mystery around her, but she was an incredible woman in that she was one of the first people to make astrology something that was acceptable in the outside world and even became part of newspapers. Before Athena Star Woman, that was not the case. So this is a much more mysterious archetype, more magnetic. If you think of someone like Angelina Jolie or Johnny Depp, then you can see this archetype at work, someone more mysterious and magnetic. And a lot of people think, well, how could someone who is mysterious or magnetic make a lot of money? But if you think of something like Victoria's Secret, you know, that's underwear, and they're using the word secret, which is a very oracle word, but we can see that it's the most successful underwear company in the world, and it's about exposing what would normally be secret. So that's an archetype. So some people have that. I don't have that very much. Everything for me is out there. I don't have much mystery. But anyway. Then the next archetype is the creative nurturer. So these people are creative, and they can also be nurturing. So some people are a specialization of this archetype. So they might be an artist, or they might be somebody who's a carer. And other people are creative and caring. So some people will be the whole umbrella and some people are specifics. And for me, you know, I'm the whole thing. So this archetype loves animals, kind of, you know, very Mother Earth, very much embracing of humanity and wanting to heal people. All of those sorts of things comes under this archetype. So you think of Oprah Winfrey, you see somebody who's really embodied this mother archetype, and is very generous in how she gives things to people, but also, you know, loving of animals and children. She's really like a universal mother figure. And it doesn't matter whether you're male or female, you can still have these archetypes, but some of these archetypes are more masculine and some are more feminine in their expression. And then the next archetype is the fifth one is called the ruler. And that is somebody who is much more organized, somebody who is able to order things, somebody who we'd see more in terms of father, somebody in that sort of archetypal expression. And again, a woman could do that. I think if we see Hillary Clinton, we see someone who's very much that ruler archetype. But also someone like Nelson Mandela, was able to rule and rule fairly. So remember, the archetypes are the ideal expression. So, you know, we would see someone like that in that ideal expression, whereas, you know, sometimes other rulers, so somebody maybe like Rupert Murdoch, some people might not see him as so ideal and more in the shadow. But, you know, different people are going to have different opinions about different people. And then the next archetype is the sage. These are people who love knowledge for knowledge's sake. If we think of Albert Einstein, you know, you might also think of the nerd. So a techo nerd would also fit in this archetype. They really love to become an expert in a particular form of knowledge, and they love to read for reading's sake. And if they're in their best expression of this, they'll teach it, or they will express it in a way that comes out into the world. In a more shadow expression, you'll see these people just gathering more and more knowledge but not really sharing it with anyone. But the best expression becomes a teacher. Then the next one is the lovers, and this archetype is the romantic archetype. This archetype looks at finding that one person to have that intimate relationship, and that that relationship is a really positive thing for both people. So if we look at someone like Hugh Jackman and Deborah Furness, we see a really great expression of the lovers, where the two of them support each other, and that their love and support allows them to be a greater contribution in the world. This archetype in shadow means people have become very insular and codependent. But in the light, it means that they can support each other to express themselves better in the world. The Virgin group have just recently, airline has just recently put an ad out called Romance is Back, and romance is definitely a part of the lover's archetype. There's certain perfumes who often express this archetype. So Amanet was very romantic and with soft pastel colours that expressed this archetype in the 80s and was very successful. And then the last archetype is the knight, and these are people who are very goal driven, so they like to set a goal and they like to take action towards that goal. So sports people might be a great expression of this archetype. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the great sports people like Kathy Freeman, you know, would be the knight. And then what happens often when the sports person retires, they also become a champion of human causes. So it might be, you know, human rights, or it might be charitable organisations where they're championing the underdog and helping that person to be able to be safe and rescued in the world. So so a lot of charitable organisations, we have a guy here called Glenn Manton who created, after he was a football star and after his football career retired, he then went in and created a company called White Lion, well, it was a charity called White Lion, where he helps youth who are at risk of going into boys' homes or girls' homes or into the youth justice system. Mm. So he looks at helping them have mentors. And we can see that's really in that knight archetype concept. So those are the eight. And what I love about them, that as opposed to, say, personality profiling, where, you know, you might be saying, oh, well, I'm an introvert, or I'm a, you know, I'm a sensor, or one of those sorts of things, and you can't get an immediate image of that. With the archetypes, you can get an immediate image of what an innocent adventurer is, or an immediate image of what a knight on a horse is going out to a tournament. So what I love about the archetypes is that it appeals to all of your senses, because you can get a feeling about it, a picture of it. You can sort of hear the sorts of things this person might say, and so you can identify with it really easily.
Nice. And how did the, I mean, how did these, how did you use these archetypes to find, to get clarity around your passion and purpose? Like, well, I know you said that the three, you go on a little bit, but how did you,
Well, what I looked at was, at one point in time, I was looking at, you know, that this idea in this book called The Soul's Code by Hillman, that, you know, your passion and purpose often expresses itself in childhood. And he talks about Yehudi Menuhin, you know, really as a very young child wanting a violin and wanting to play the violin. And I started to think, okay, well, there must be hints in childhood. And because of this Plato concept of the myth of Ur, that, you know, we, our soul is given a destiny, I thought, well, we probably remember that better in childhood. So I started looking at kids, well, people's childhood dreams or the things they just love to do. So it might simply be riding around on my bike. Now, some people riding around on their bike, that might be about going on an adventure, whereas for somebody else, riding around on my bike might be connecting with my friends and talking and chatting with my friends. So the same thing could have a different symbolic meaning. So I started to collect these with people and look at all the things they loved to do and looking at all the things that they wanted to be when they were a child. And I started to find the repeated patterns, and then I started to identify that those certain words and certain repeated patterns were archetypal. And so I would interview people and would talk to them about their childhood, and we would see these repeated words. And from that, I was able to identify which three archetypes were their passion archetypes and which was their talent. And we looked at their dreams and their passions from 0 to 7, 7 to 14, 14 to 21, and their adult passions. And I just found over and over and over again what people were really attracted to. Not what their parents wanted to do them to do or what their work necessarily was, but what they loved definitely had a pattern, and that most people had three and that they were could be identified archetypally. And then most people had something they were really good at but often didn't necessarily like, and that was their talent. And then what we would do is I created a coaching process called Your Quest that allowed people to find their archetypes, discover what an ideal expression of those archetypes would be in a business or in a relationship or in a health regime. And then we were able to do some coaching around that, able to clear away any negative influences that stop them being a clear expression of their passion, and then to set goals specifically on their passion. Because what I see a lot of people do is they just pluck goals out of the air, and usually those goals something to do with what society thinks is right for them and not what's maybe right for their real soul. So in this way, from the archetypes, you're setting goals that are really specific to your passion and purpose and what you're meant to contribute on earth, what the meaning of your life is. And that if we set goals like that, people really have a strong motivation to achieve that goal. And if we find that, and they go along and they want to take action, but something is stopping them, we know that that's a negative influence from something in the past. So then we go and we clear that, and then people are free to really move forward in their passion and purpose.
Wow. Now, can somebody have more than three in that, or are there people that have, you know, four, five, or is it pretty much, I mean, I know you said that it usually ends up being three strong ones.
Yes. I mean, look, in the end, and this is sort of a little bit of a kind of a more advanced section of this work, in the end, each one of these archetypes has strengths. And in the end, we do need to be able to use all of these strengths to achieve what we want. You know, for instance, for me, the ruler archetype is something that I have a lot of challenge with. You know, from a child, I was very dyslexic, quite ADHD. I don't like those labels, but you get the idea, a really hyperactive child who didn't like to be still and didn't like to be organized. My room was always a mess, you know. So, you know, this archetype of the ruler, you know, I just really was rebelling against that archetype, and it was a real challenge for me. In the end, to run a successful business, I needed to make friends with that archetype and get myself organized, or I wouldn't be able to deliver things in a way people could understand. So I did have to make friends with that, but I make sure that my business is not focused on that. So I make sure my business is focused on my three passion archetypes and my one talent, and that means I'm sitting in my flow and my genius. But, you know, because I don't really want to manage a lot of people, you know, so my business is a smaller boutique business, there are some things that I need to be able to do to keep my business running. And so, you know, they might be a bit challenging to me, but, you know, I can do them, but I also find ways of delegating those. But if I couldn't understand that and I was still rebelling against that, I wouldn't have a successful business. So we do say that what we need to do is that it's best for us to focus on the three passions and the one talent, which gives us four, which is a lot to focus on. We need to find a combination of that that works. But then we also have a bit of a journey in fulfilling filling our weaknesses, but that should not be the focus of our business. That just is a part of our personal growth. So some people may have one more, but, you know, then we would say that's probably their talent. So, yeah.
Okay, okay. I was wondering how you would decipher what a talent is, but wow, that's, so you're just working with a lot of the strengths to these archetypes or your strengths, things that you know that you enjoy and working with them. How can we muse our passion and purpose? How can we marry them so we can be successful in business? So that
we can support ourselves, what I was saying before. A lot of people, you know, so say somebody was an accountant, right? And so they've developed a lot of skills in the ruler archetype. You know, they're very organized. Their business was around that. But say they find that incredibly boring. And say their passion is more around, you know, being creative, as an example. Well, what I find is that they need to find some way of using their experience as an accountant, because they've developed a lot of skills that people are willing to pay them for in that. So then what they might need to do is say, you know, what they really love to do is to paint, and they've got, you know, this incredible artistic capacity and they love it and they're really good at it and they do painting. Well, then, you know, they're going to need to use some of their accounting background to become detailed about how they can then make money from doing that. But what a lot of people will do is just leave all that experience behind and not use that in their passion business. But they do need to marry those two things together in order to be successful. So it doesn't mean that they have to do necessarily creative accounting, although that could be an expression of that. But what they do need to be able to do is use some of those, what, you know, those skills in organizing, in understanding money and finances as a part of that. So, for instance, like I was saying before, in my business, at first when I set up my business, it was just all about, do you know what, all I want to do is be creative and have fun and, you know, do magic and all of that. And it was kind of like, okay, Pip. If my processes can't get people results in the real world, well, then do you know what? I'm not going to get paid for what I do. So I have to then systematize what it is I do in a way that people can logically follow in order to get results in their world. And when I was able to marry those two things together, I could still have fun and be passionate about what I did, but I was going to make money from what I do. So one of the things that people don't understand about passion and purpose is they think that when they discover their passion and purpose, it means everything will always be in flow and they'll never have to do anything again that they don't want to do. And this is just not true. There's stages of growth that people go through in order to achieve their passion and purpose. And, you know, the first stage is that ideas stage, you know, and that's when you're really excited and enthusiastic. And that's the first stage. We call that, you know, the childlike stage. And that's really important. That's part of the journey and that allows us to cross the threshold into our business. But the moment we create a business or the moment we're really doing our passion and purpose, we're going to come across tests and trials, because tests and trials is what allow us to grow the new us, who's going to be a better expression of our passion and purpose. So a lot of people, they have this childlike concept that when they discover their passion and purpose, they will never have a challenge again. And then what happens is when they have a challenge, they go, oh, that mustn't have been my passion and purpose. And they go right back to the beginning again in the ideas phase, where it's all nice and fun and, you know, nobody can criticize it because it's just an idea. And you don't know whether it's successful or you're going to fail at it because it's just an idea. And a lot of people love to just feel safe continuing to just talk about the ideas instead of taking action. But the moment, you know, we take action, we try and make something happen in our world, there will definitely be tests and trials. But those tests and trials are necessary because they create the channel and they clear the channel for flow to happen. So the tests and trials stage, we call that the teenager. You know, that's a bit more angsty, it's a bit more frustrating, there's hard work, we have to grow, we have to stretch ourselves, we have to become the new person. And then there's the second threshold, and for those people who know the hero's journey, this does mirror the hero's journey. The second threshold is apostasis. This is where you die to who you used to be and you become reborn into who we are now. And, you know, this is very much also a part of the Easter story where somebody dies, you know, Jesus dies to being a human and becomes reborn as that more godlike self. And we all have a process like that in every hero's journey. There's a place where we die to who we used to be and we become reborn into who we are going to become. And, you know, this is, you know, I'm not talking about this so much in a religious sense. I'm talking about this in terms of a hero's journey sense, that we all go through this journey where, you know, in Neo, in the Matrix movie, you know, Neo dies to being himself as just a computer programmer and he becomes reborn as the One. And all of us go through this. So when we go through this apostasis, that's a really big moment where we know we'll never be that old person. So there came a point in my business where, you know, sometimes there's temptation to go back and be an employee. And then there comes a moment where you just know you're unemployable and there's no way you'll ever go back. So you have to make the business work, you know. And a lot of people go through this phase, but a lot of people are afraid of that. So then they don't really become a hero. But I say to people, do you know what? There's no apologies for it not being easy, because if it was easy, you wouldn't need to be a hero in order to make it happen. If it was easy, you wouldn't be an extraordinary human being living your passion and purpose. You would be an ordinary human being just doing it the way everybody else did it and repeating the old patterns of your parents, you know? So this is a hero's journey, and yes, sometimes it's not easy. That's just the way that it is. If we understand that, we can be prepared for that and keep moving forward. And then, you know, we come to the next stage, which is the young adult stage, and this is a really exciting stage because this is a moment where you get what you wanted. Your business is in flow, everything is happening, it's all working, you're living your passion and purpose, you're making money from it. It's a really fantastic phase of that, and we call that the ultimate boon, you know, the best thing that could happen to you. And then you cross the final threshold, and this is where you become the mature adult, where, yes, you've got the goal, but you're also contributing to the world and making the world a better place as well. And this is a place where you are master of two worlds, where you can do what is right for you as well as contribute what's right for the world. What ordinary people do is they're either doing what's right for them and, you know, everybody else is not having a good time around them, or they're doing what's right for everybody else and they're martyred and sacrificing themselves in that process. But when we move into the mature adult phase, we're able to create this balance between what is right for us and what is right for the world. And this is a wonderful paradoxical dance that we're able to do in this mature adult phase. And it's important when we start our passion and purpose that we understand that we are going to go through these phases. So we're not expecting the ultimate boon too early in the process. You know, early on there's times when, you know, you'll get some successes, of course, but that there may be tests and trials and they're meant to be there and that's okay. So, you know, even if you're doing an exercise regime, you know, there'll be those times when your muscles are sore and things happen.
Sure.
But, you know, that's okay. Keep on going. But maybe do it in a gentle, nurturing way and find creative ways to solve some of those problems so that you can keep going. So, yeah, so this is one of the ways that we become successful in business through our passion and purpose, is to understand that it's okay to go through these phases. They're meant to be there. Keep persisting, because it's persistence that makes you successful and become a hero in that phase.
It is a challenging journey. And those thresholds are, they can be intense. You know, and
they can. And, you know, they're necessary, because if we want to become that clear expression of our passion and purpose, we have to become more of who we are. We have to become an extraordinary person. And, you know, we become an extraordinary person by overcoming problems, by overcoming tests and trials. You know, tests and trials temper our personality, make it strong so it become a better expression of the soul. So, you know, I always think of tests and trials like a sword going into the fire and then going into the water and going into the fire and going into the water until it's strong. And that's what we need to do with our personality, because our personality, you know, it needs some growing up so that it become a better and better expression of our soul's destiny.
And I'm sure that you, you know, as far as being most of us growing up, you know, we want to be what makes our parents happy. We want to be what is accepted out in the world. So it is challenging.
It is.
Faith in that, you know, to express the true me, you know.
Exactly.
To do that in that moment. But it does feel so good when you do it. Wow.
That's exactly right. Because, you know, look, we've had challenges in our childhood, and when we go to express our passion and purpose, often those limitations and challenges come up to be cleared so that we can heal that. And later on we can contribute that. I mean, you know, in my life I had abuse when I was a child from a family friend, and had to go through a court case, and soon after that my father died. And when I started to set up my business, the place that I had been employed at, they stopped paying me, and I had to take them to court. And because when I was a child, I'd gone through this court case, going into court and taking legal action was a very, very scary thing for me to do. But the thing that happened by that, what appeared to be a negative, was that a lot of that stuff that had been repressed that I hadn't thought about for a long time, it kind of bubbled up, and I had to find a way of healing that and clearing that, so I had the strength to stand up for myself and to say, do you know what, I'm worthy of getting paid the money that you owe me for the work that I did for you. And I was able to do that, and that really strengthened me, and it meant that when I was in business, and you know, if I had challenges in business, I felt I had the strength to overcome that. And what people don't understand is they see someone successful in business, but they don't often see the challenges that those people went through to become successful in business. And every single person, no matter who they are, has gone through some challenges. And often the most successful people have been through some of the biggest challenges. So I think it's important for us to kind of like go, okay, this is part of the journey. Let's accept that. Let's move forward and find creative ways and find nurturing ways to nurture our way through it. I think a lot of people, when they come up with tests and trials, try and bully themselves through it. And that's not the way. We want to find nurturing, creative ways to get through our tests and trials and support ourselves and find supportive people to support us during those periods of time. The other thing about the hero's journey is that once we finish it in one area, you know, in business, we'll start the journey again. So if we want to create a new technique or a new part of our business, or we might decide we want to focus on our relationships, and then we'll go through the hero's journey all over again and the archetypal stages of growth. And it's an ever upward spiral of development that we go through.
Nice. Oh, I like that. You know, it's like when you look at it from that kind of that perspective, it really, you come to each challenge so differently. Like even as you're saying that, I'm thinking of all the stuff that I've got ahead of me this week that needs to get done. And I immediately, my whole body just softened and just,
yeah,
it's like, it's okay. And all, you know, as with anything, you know, and all, especially as you were talking about, you know, having to stand up and claim, no, I'm worth this money, and I'm here to claim it because I earned it. I've come forward, and I've produced this work that was quality and good, and yes, I do deserve it. And in that whole process, you also had what seems like a real deep healing around what had happened in childhood and all of that abuse too. That was kind of the way it kind of transforms into it. Is that like all
absolutely.
That energy? It's like you've broken through everything.
Absolutely. So, you know, that you know, as we grow bigger, you know, our vibrational level gets higher, and anything that's not able to raise at the same rate then bubbles up to be healed. So what I say to people is the things that happen to us in our childhood and in our past, if they're unresolved, like mine was, because I lived in a family that didn't want to talk about emotions, and so long as I looked reasonably functional, then, you know, let's not talk about it.
Then
what happens is that inside our psyche, there's a child who's still at that age, and that when something in the environment is similar to what happened, then it's the child who comes out who's trying to deal with it, and the adult sort of almost disappears. And then it's like a six-year-old child who's trying to deal with this adult situation, and that's why we often feel resourceless in those circumstances. So I say to people, do you know, it's exactly like the Peter Pan story. Inside all of us, there's things that happen in our past that are unresolved, and they're like the lost boys or the lost girls in the Peter Pan story. You know, they're stuck at a particular age. They don't have resources to grow, and so they're kind of stuck in our psyche at that age. And what happens is that Peter Pan, who's just a child himself, tries to go and help those boys, but it doesn't work. And then he finds Wendy, and she's too young to mother them as well. But those two parts, you know, the little boy and the little girl, Peter Pan and Wendy, they're able to collect those lost boys and lost girls in female case and bring them back to now, where they can be looked after by Wendy's mother and father. And that way they're able to be nurtured and really grow. And this is what we need to do inside our own psyche. We don't want to bully and punish the children inside of us who aren't resourceful or the things that are, that, you know, we find, oh my gosh, I responded to that with a fear. Of course we responded to that as a fear, because that's maybe a four-year-old who's trying to deal with it. Instead, what we need to do is go, no, it's okay, little child, come back with me. Here I am, the adult. I'm going to mother you and I'm going to father you. I'm going to keep you safe. And do you know what? I, the adult, is going to deal with this situation so that you can learn how to play and have fun and enjoy yourself. And, you know, then to just really hug that little child and have it merge into you and grow up with those resources that you didn't have when you were a child. And this is like all my kind of therapeutic philosophy is all about the fact that we need to go and collect those lost children, and we need to give them resources that our parents couldn't give us, but us as an adult needs to mother and father those children so that they can grow up with the resources they need in order to be truly functional. And that this is sort of a symbolic, metaphoric process. It's actually an archetypal process of going and collecting those children and bringing them back and loving them. And this is really the secret to self-love. People often ask me that question, how do I love myself? And it's about, instead of being angry at or frustrated with the parts of us that aren't functional, just realize they're just little children. They're just you at a younger age with, you know, without having the resources or the parenting or the friends or the siblings who you should have had in order to help you cope. So let's be that parent, that friend, that sibling, that older brother or sister who's ideal, and give that child what it needed at the time. And then you'll find that your psyche matures and that vibration is able to grow up and mature as you do. And then you become more whole and more self-loving, and then it becomes easier to be successful in your world.
That is so refreshing, you know, because it's been so long that we've had these paradigms of just go after it, just do it, just, you know, they're very harsh, you know, about treating ourselves. And that society, you know, it's so much where society has been. And I love that your work is bringing out this, you know, self-love that's really around nurturing and self-care. And what a beautiful model.
Thank you.
Like it's just, it eases into, you know, just this new growth, that it can be this beautiful process. And, yeah, you'll have challenges, but the more that you seem to go into that, you know, work in from that nurturing place, it would seem that it would facilitate it much quicker than if we don't. I'm sure.
Well, that's what I have
reckon
found.
That's what you found. Yeah.
In my own journey, but also in my journey with hundreds and hundreds of clients that I've worked with, one of the things in the hero's journey is in that teenage phase when we go through tests and trials, there's a place where it says, meet the goddess. So this is in, you know, in in mythology. In, say, the Matrix movie, he meets Trinity and he also meets the Oracle, and they help to support and nurture him through tests and trials. And what happens for a lot of people is they're trying to use power during tests and trials, when in actual fact we need creativity, nurture and love during tests and trials. So that's a really important understanding that a lot of people don't have. But there is a place for power and self-empowerment, and they call that in the hero's journey meeting the God, the power, the organizational capacity. So, but that is actually after tests and trials. So what gets us through tests and trials is the creativity. As Einstein said, we cannot solve a problem with the same thinking that created it. We need to be able to think outside of the box to create a problem. Whereas if we're just using force, we're staying inside the box and trying to break the boundaries of the box. And that's always hard work. Whereas if we use creativity, we can just pull ourselves completely out of the box and find a different solution, a different way of being, and a more nurturing, loving way of treating ourselves. But there does come a point where we also do need to be self-empowered, and we can then face external forces that are trying to stop us or trying to put us in another direction. And those external forces are meant to test our internal power. So if we've always been used to people-pleasing and peacemaking, then there is a place where we do need to become strong and say no and understand our direction is different from what this person wants or what this person's doing, and that we're not doing that person or ourselves any favours if we placate them when we know we should be going in a different direction. And this is a place where I think the word forgiveness has been used incorrectly, and that is where people are forgiving someone, say they've got an abusive spouse, and they're forgiving that abusive spouse and staying in the relationship and putting up with bad behaviour, instead of saying, no, you don't get to treat me that way. You know, I deserve to be treated with respect. And you see, if we're allowing ourselves to be abused, we cannot fulfill our passion and purpose. So there is a place where we have to become strong. We have to be able to say no. We have to be able to stand up for ourselves, because that's what builds our self-worth in order to fulfill our passion and purpose and have it successful. Because, you know, you're not going to be paid for your passion and purpose if you're not respected. So these sort of external forces we have to say no to allows us to build that internal strength. And when we do that, not only is it good for us and us, our ability to fulfill our passion and purpose, but it's good for the other person, because the other person shouldn't be allowed to get away with treating people in a bullying manner. A lot of people say to me, oh, you know, those people shouldn't behave like that. And I said, well, that's true. And the only way that we are going to have a world where people don't have bullies running rampant and bullies being our leaders is if we that stand up and say no to those people. So we can't complain about bullies if we're not willing to say no to them.
Yep.
No? And it is important that we have legal structures that we use to support us to say no to that, because it's usually the empathic people who are being forgiving when they should be standing up for themselves instead and saying no and letting that person go through the process, because otherwise we're enabling bullies, we're letting them get away with that behaviour, and we're rewarding their negative behaviour. So they're going to continue to do that to other people. Whereas we should be saying, if there's a bully there, I need to say no and I need to make that stand, because otherwise I let that person get away with it and they're just going to do it bigger and worse to somebody else. So, you know, the other thing we need to do is, if we don't like our leaders, we need to have the self-empowerment to stand up and become the leader. And then we can be leading with love and compassion, but also in a direction that is powerful for ourselves and empowering for others. So, you know, this is a really important thing we need to do, because people who are loving often are not being empowered. And we need to be both if we're going to become a loving leader and change our world.
Very true. You know, and what you were saying about, you know, a lot of times individuals have experienced abuse in younger years. It's how we learn to abuse ourselves.
That's
and we're
exactly
hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
So to have a, you know, a new set of skills that can teach us how to
say, okay, this is our journey, and it's a journey. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
You know, there's the bully, there's the, you know, because it becomes the inner bully.
Yes.
Within our minds, and every time we'll go forward, and that there's the inner bully right there.
You know, that's like right.
How to, what a, God, that is just so important to be able to have those nurturing skills rather than just trying to power up and then you find you collapse when you get to it. And it's like, gosh, I really wanted a breakthrough, and boy, did I just so not have a breakthrough right then. You know,
absolutely.
And then you beat yourself up a little bit. So, wow, how exciting that this archetypal work also can help us to build our strength in a nice way with ease and grace to become strong, just like weightlifting, right?
Absolutely.
Just like weightlifting. What a perfect image to hold in the mind of how this works.
That's right, and weightlifting in a way where we don't injure ourselves because we're pushing through, but we're listening to our body and able to become strong in a way that's really loving.
Wow, that is just so potent. I mean, that just rung my bell. You know? It's like you catch yourself because you don't realize you're trying to power through something when you really, it's like, oh, okay, I can be creative and nurturing to myself.
Yes.
On this process, and that's where the breakthrough happens.
Absolutely.
You know?
And, you know, this is really what I say to people is, you know, we need to have both the masculine and the feminine. They need to be in rapport and in love inside of us so that we can give birth to our new way of being, our new personality. And it takes, you know, it takes both in a loving way together. So what I think has happened is, you know, as our world has become, you know, less sexist and, you know, women have become more empowered, but in some ways we've still got what I call archetypal sexism, where the feminine is still being pushed down, even in women.
Yeah.
And that it's really important that we see the feminine in its ideal form, not in its stereotypical 1950s housewife form, but it's an ideal form, you know, like a lioness who's strong and able to go out into the world but still loving and nurturing and able to, you know, look after the children, whether that's real external children or whether it's our internal children. And whether we're a man or a woman, we need to be able to have access to both the masculine and the feminine because it took a man and a woman to make us. And so we need to be able to make friends with both of these, but we also need to know when to use which one. So that we can give birth to ourselves.
I am just so happy you're in the world.
Oh, thank you so much, Dawn.
This is so what we need, you know?
Yeah.
It just, boy, we've got a journey ahead of us as a world, as a human race, and you know, there's a lot of things that need to shift and change and get better, you know, so to, wow, it's just, I'm just so happy.
Well, thank you too, Dawn, because it's just so wonderful to have people like yourself who's taking a lot of these different thoughts and different processes and different people's expertise and getting it out there in the world where people can look at what resonates for them because different things work for different people. So it's just wonderful to have people like yourself facilitating and following your passion and purpose to be able to get these things out there.
Thanks. Yeah, and it's everything like you were explaining. You know, you hit these moments where this is where if you're creative and nurturing, you can, you know, that's where you have your breakthrough. And if you're, I'm just so many things, just so many insights have come through in the course of talking with you during this interview that it's just, wow.
Thanks.
I'm in awe. Is there, I guess, anything that you, what would you say to people who are listening right now, who are having a very challenging time, you know, in their career or bringing money or, you know, just figuring out where it is in life or even believing that they can have a life that they are truly feeling authentic and authentically fulfilled in their true expression, what would you, what can you say to those listeners right now?
Well, I think the thing that I believe really firmly is that every single person on the earth has a destiny, has something unique that they're meant to contribute to the world, and that when we marry our passion with our talent, we create our purpose, and that every person has that purpose, and the world needs every single person's purpose, and that it is a journey, and that the things that are negative in our lives are there to strengthen us so that we can more strongly and in a more fulfilled way achieve our potential. So I understand deeply the challenges that people have in terms of expressing their passion and purpose, and to understand that for thousands and thousands of years, all heroes have gone through these challenges, and that the hero's journey is moving from being an ordinary person to an extraordinary person, and that in that process there's always tests and trials, and to just keep going in a way that is self-loving. And, you know, it's okay to seek help to support you through that journey so that you can love yourself more. You know, we are a community animal, and it's important for us to be able to connect with others and to share that. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that is the truth. And like, you know, Marianne Williamson said, that it's important for us to be shining our light and giving permission to others to shine theirs too. And that it's okay, we've all been through the tests and trials, we'll go through them again and again at every higher level of expression of ourselves. And just to keep, you know, keep going and keep loving oneself, and, you know, keep ensuring that you are only ever treated with respect by others.
Wow. Beautiful. That's just perfect. Just hearing you and hearing that is just, it gives me so much inspiration for, you know, the world. Inside every one of us is this extraordinary existence that is an expression that wants to come through.
Absolutely.
Wow. Wow. That's our journey. That's our purpose in realizing that.
Exactly.
Ah.
That's
exactly. Awesome. Oh, my gosh. And we've already come to the end of our interview. And you've brought a gift that can help our listeners to on their journey. And if you want to let them know about the eight archetypes, the free gift that you've brought to them today, that would be great.
Yes. That's right. So what I've got is a description of each one of the eight archetypes with some questions you can ask yourself to see whether this archetype is yours. And it makes it a lot easier to look at those archetypes and see, oh, which one do I think might be my three passion archetypes, and maybe even which one do I think is my talent archetype. So there's a piece of art that is a image of each one of the eight archetypes. There's some questions to ask yourself whether this is yours, and there's a description of each one of the archetypes. So it's a really great thing to be able to go have a look at, mull over and think, yes, how can I bring these things into my everyday life, into my career? And it might even just be simply making what you're currently doing more in line with your passion. It doesn't always have to be doing something new. So, yeah, so that's the free gift that I've got for people. So then people can go to the website and download that. I know that you'll have a click here. But basically, if people want to find out more, it's www.pipmckay.com.au, which is pipmckay.com.au. And on there, there's lots of, you can look at my YouTube channel, there's lots of fun things on there, but you can also download this gift. And I know you'll have a click through that goes specifically to that page as well.
Yep, we will have a link. So for any listeners on this broadcast, there is a link on this page that you can click that will take you directly to Pip's page to receive your free gift and to connect more with her and all the incredible stuff that she is up to right now. And you're up to quite a bit. So, wow. I am just so glad that you had time to speak with us today. Thank you so very much.
That's my pleasure, Dawn. I love to share this work, so I'm really grateful to be able to have the opportunity to speak with you.
Wow, thank you so much. And thank you to all our listeners who've been listening in for Australia's beloved Pip McKay on the Unleash Your True Purpose Now Super Summit interview series. Be sure to look in your inbox tomorrow for our next speaker, and everybody make it a great day.